Good Sunday to you, and welcome to another cheese-curdling episode of Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Anne Saxelby, and my guest this afternoon is actor and playwright Patrick Fitzgerald.
Good afternoon,
Patrick. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Cutting the Curd has been sponsored today by Fairway Market and is being produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. So now I've done a show on cheese and rock and roll, so I thought it would only be appropriate to see what we could turn up in the world of cheese and literature. And I thought, I was going through authors and thinking about it and was finally like, you know, who better to get into the nitty gritty of kind of food and the mess of it all than James Joyce? And Patrick, who's a friend of mine, I know was a bit of a Joyce lover himself, and had written a play called Gibraltar, which is an adaptation for the stage from the 1922 version of Ulysses. And in it, there are various plot lines, but, you know, food and the symbolism of food is kind of a central tenet of the play. So we're going to read through bits and pieces of Patrick's play and discuss Leopold Bloom's relationship to food and our own relationships to food and how it all kind of, you know, mashes together in the world of literature and drama. So again, welcome to Cutting the Curd, Patrick. It's a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to write this piece, Gibraltar?
I suppose it was just the love of the book and the fact that I wanted to give it back, kind of make the story clear and give it back to people, because I think it's gotten lost in academia. People are afraid of it, and it's a book that just keeps giving and giving, and so I kind of set out just tell a bare bones version of what happens to Leopold Bloom and Molly Bloom and their daughter Millie and their dead son Rudy on this day, the 16th of June 1904, and it's a simple story. It's just a little love story. It does get lost in the brambles of the book. And I just wanted to bring that out, and so I've adapted it, and it's a two-character play, myself and Cara Seymour are the actors. Terry Kinney is directing. He's one of the founders of the Steppenwolf Theatre Company in Chicago, and it's a love of Joyce, really.
And there are multiple characters in the play. There's, of course, Molly and there's Bloom. And so you guys kind of go back and forth, and you also play the narrator and the muse.
It's stagecraft. I mean, you can do anything. It's a text and I'm interpreting it, and it kind of just jumps off the page. But let's have a look at the first time that we meet Leopold Bloom in the book and in the play is... the morning, he's getting his wife's breakfast ready, and this is the narrator. Mr. Leopold Bloom ate with relish the inner organs of beasts and fowls. He liked thick giblet soup, nutty gizzards, a stuffed roast heart, liver slices fried with crust crumbs, fried hen cod's rolls. But most of all, he liked grilled mutton kidneys, which gave to his palate a fine tang of faintly scented urine. Kidneys were in his mind as he moved about the kitchen softly, writing her breakfast things on the humpy tray. Gelid light and air were in the kitchen, but out of doors, gentle summer morning everywhere, made him feel a bit peckish. So that's how it begins, and, you know, it's food right off, you know, and...
As we kind of all are, I think. I know that I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Food, Kyle, blood, dung, earth, food. Like stoking an engine. It all just goes around in a big circle, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think that, I don't know, I love, you know, relishing in the details of all that. It's kind of like, it makes me feel like I'm not so crazy, in a way, for thinking about food as much as I do, because Bloom is really going for the nitty-gritty. He's preparing the breakfast, he's making her food, he's thinking about his food.
And then a letter comes through the mailbox and everything kind of changes. It's a letter addressed to Mrs. Marion Bloom, Boldhand. Mrs. Marion. In those days it was very bad manners to address a married woman by her Christian name. It was Mrs. L.M. Bloom.
L.M., so Leopold first.
Yes.
And her name is Marion, but she's called Molly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's Leopold, but he's called Poldy or Papley or, you know, they all have their little names. But the letter is from Blazes Boyland. Blazes Boyland is a concert promoter. Molly is a singer. She's an opera singer and has a great voice. And she's an outsider and hasn't got any gigs in Dublin for a long time because of her association with the English Army.
Mm.
Bloom is an outsider. His father is Jewish. His mother isn't, but everybody thinks he's Jewish. He's actually not. But
because it's the mother, of
because
course,
the
in
mother,
that religion.
Yes,
yeah, that.
And his mother's name was Higgins.
Okay.
Anyway, we could take another little bit. Let's go to...
And now, why is Molly in her bed? Can I just ask this? Because as I was reading it, I was like, is she infirm? Is she sick? Is Bloom kind of doting on her? Why is he bringing her breakfast in bed?
He brings her breakfast in bed every morning.
What a husband!
She loves to hear him falling up the stairs with the things rattling on the humpy tray. And she, it's just expected. It's what he does. He's kind of one of those guys that gets annoying for bringing the breakfast in bed, though, you know what I mean? you don't always win by bringing the breakfast in bed. I know this. I've gone through this before. It's like you lose cred somewhere, you know?
Exactly. There's something to that mystery and intrigue of not knowing, you know, yeah, of not knowing if you're in their favor all the time, I guess.
And, you know, he wonders this morning before the letter arrives, you know, it's like thin bread and butter she likes in the morning. Maybe she'd like something different, but no, she doesn't. She just wants her thin bread and butter and her cup of tea. And so Bloom brings her breakfast, and then he
receives this letter, which is jarring.
It jars him, and he sits there and he's like, Mrs. L.M. Bloom, Millie, Mrs. Marion Bloom, bold hand Marion, reading, laying back now, counting the strands of her hair, smiling. A soft, calm regret flowed down his backbone, increasing. Will happen. Yes. Prevent. Useless. Can't move. He felt the flowing qualm spread over him. Useless to move now. Full, gluey woman's lips. He felt heavy, full. Then a gentle loosening of his bowels. Meow. Meow. Wait till I'm ready. Heaviness. Hot day coming. Outhouse. A paper. He liked to read at stool. You want to manure the whole place over. He's out in his back garden. Scabby soil. Mulch of dung. Best thing to clean ladies' kid gloves. Dirty cleans. Ashes too. Reclaim the whole place. Grow peas in that corner there. Lettuce. Always have fresh greens then. Still, gardens have that drawbacks. That bee that bit me. Got a pectoral trauma. Better be careful not to get these trousers dirty for the funeral. He's assuming the position in the outhouse.
Uh-huh.
Something new and easy. No great hurry. Keep it a bit. Quietly he read, restraining himself, the first column, and yielding but resisting, began the second. Midway, his last resistance yielding, he allowed his bowels to ease themselves quietly, that slight constipation of yesterday quite gone. Hope it's not too big. Bring on piles again. No. Just right. Ah. One tabloid of Cascara Sagrada. Life might be so.
So it
Cascara Sagrada would be a laxative.
Okay. I was wondering. I was like, it sounds way more sort of flowery and exciting.
Yeah, it's just a I think it's a powder, a herbal laxative.
Okay. He talks. Yeah, there's talk in in different parts of the play about different ointments and sort of solutions and filters that he goes to see the pharmacist for
he's walking to the chemist, the pharmacist, to get a lotion made up. Molly has a special lotion, and it's his big job for the day is to get this lotion. Of course, he never gets it in the end, but he goes into the pharmacy, and this is what he's thinking as he's walking in. Smell almost cure you like the dentist's doorbell. Doctor, whack! Those homely recipes are often the best. Strawberries for the teeth. Oatmeal, they say, steeped in buttermilk. Skin food. The first fella that picked an herb to cure himself had a bit of pluck. Simples. Poison's the only cure. Remedy where you least expect it. clever of nature.
So clever of nature. It's interesting. I mean, in all of this, we're talking about, you know, food is kind of the jumping off point for a lot of Bloom's trains of thoughts. And then he finds himself out in the outhouse and thinking about the garden and how, you know, what he's going to do is actually the same thing that's going to make his garden grow next year. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of I feel like a lot of people don't acknowledge, we live in a time where people don't acknowledge that kind of cycle of fertility and how all of that kind of plays into everything in the life of the world, and something about James Joyce that was made him quite controversial as well as potent as he is today is that he was willing to delve into all those kind of disgusting dirty details.
God is in the dirty details. I mean, yeah. That thing that you're saying that about fertility, you know, the muse actually says to him when he's going on about his garden, he's like, you know, has he not a seed field closer to home that lies fallow for the want of a plowshare? You know, he's like an exotic plant who when he was in the Orient, he thrived, but taken out of that atmosphere, his roots have lost their quandam vigor. Bloom is, he's the perennial outsider, and he can't be fertile in that way.
Now, what does he do for a career?
He sells ads.
Ah.
On commission. Is it a real job? Yeah, but he gets to wander around Dublin an awful lot. But he does. I mean, he does dream of one sole unique advertisement to cause passers to stop and wonder. A poster novelty, simplest, not exceeding the span of casual vision and congruous with the velocity of modern life. So he's quite a modern figure, really, in that, you know, he's onto the advertising thing. He dreams about this all day as well, yeah.
And that's what he's reading when he's on the toilet, is it not? Or is he...
No, he's reading Matcham's Masterstroke.
Ah, okay.
Prize titbit story written by Mr. Philip Beaufoy at the rate of one guinea per column.
Interesting.
Yes, you know, from the Titbits magazine, which was a kind of a very popular magazine back then. So he's reading Thrash.
as it should be, I guess, mm-hmm. when you're on the John, you mm-hmm. know, that's what that's what everybody does. So you're taking us through Bloom's day.
Yeah, I could bring you to he goes to a funeral.
Is that the kind of the bit? So there are different events in the day. He's going to the chemist.
He goes to the chemist first, and then he goes and has a bath.
Okay.
You know, and he fantasizes about masturbating in the bath. And we think he does, but he doesn't, because he masturbates later in the day. And he says, damn glad I didn't do it in the bath this morning. So that's how we know he didn't do it in the bath. So he has his bath. He likes himself, Bloom. He looks after himself. You know, he looks after the food he eats, his cleanliness, which was kind of odd in Dublin at the time, you know, where I think the average bath was like once every 6 months or something. But Bloom looks after himself. He's a modern man.
Yeah.
He's a metrosexual, I suppose, of his day.
He's going to the pharmacist for ointments for himself too, isn't he?
Not really. He doesn't go that, but he does get the pure curd soap, so he can combine business with pleasure in the bath, because the funeral would be rather glum.
Okay, good. So okay. So after the funeral, he's got a plan. Again, he's planning. You know.
He's going to go and nail an advertisement, and he's going to do this, and he's doing that. He doesn't actually get anything done in the day. That's one of the great things about Bloom. He never does anything. He doesn't fight. He doesn't fuck. He doesn't do anything.
It's like a tragic Seinfeld character in a way.
Yeah, He thinks, and his wife thinks, that he's having an affair with somebody, but no, he's never had an affair. He's got a condom in his pocket, and he looks at it and he's like, oh, French letter still in my pocketbook, cause of half the trouble, because his wife knows it's there. And then he says, but might happen sometime. And he's like, I don't think. It's not going to happen. But anyway, at the funeral, he's standing there, his friend Dignam's about to be put into the ground, and this is what he's thinking. Mine over there, the plot I bought. Mama, poor Mama. Ellen Bloom, born Higgins. And little Rudy, who passed away. Who departed this life. As if they did it of their own accord. Got the shove, all of them. More interesting if they told you what they were. So-and-so, I travelled for Cork, Lino. I paid 5 shillings on the pound. Or a woman with her saucepan. I cooked good Irish stew. The coffin dived out of sight. Pause. if we were all suddenly somebody else. We are praying now for the repose of the soul, hoping you're well and not in hell. More room if they buried them standing. Sitting or kneeling? You couldn't. Standing. It's the blood sinking in the earth gives new life. Corpse manure. Rot quick in damp earth. The lean old ones, tougher. Then a kind of a tallowy, kind of a cheesy. Then begin to get black, black treacle oozing. A corpse is meat gone bad. Well, and what's cheese? Corpse of milk.
So with that, we are going to take a break on Cutting the Curd. And when we come back, we are going to get into the second half of the play and talk about Joyce and cheese.
Cheese.
Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Anne Saxelby, and my guest this afternoon is Patrick Fitzgerald, author of the play Gibraltar, which is an adaptation of James Joyce's Ulysses. James Joyce, in his book Ulysses, talks a lot about food. Leopold Bloom talks a lot about food. And some things that, you know, I was kind of, though I haven't read the whole book yet, things that I've been sort of thinking about that were kind of common themes, you know, so food is related to sex, and sex is related to different aromas, different tastes, nostalgia. There's also decay in the book, which is kind of woven throughout. And these themes, though they can be kind of repellent and attracting at the same time, I feel are really at the crux of this food we call cheese, which, you know, for me, I think, you know, probably way too much about. But that last passage about going into the ground and kind of at some point becoming slightly cheesy and then becoming something else. And then he makes the comment about cheese being the corpse of milk. It's true. There is something that is very strange and almost, I don't know, that some people love cheese and some people really can't handle it. And it is because of that, you know, because there is this actual decay and this kind of rot that's happening on purpose. Do you like cheese, Patrick?
I really like cheese, yes.
Okay.
I do like cheese a lot. Some of the more pungent and I take them a little bit. You know, a little goes a long way. I really like cheese for that because you know you're eating something. I'll eat anything as long as I know I'm eating something real. And I find that satisfying. It's not consumption of huge amounts, though. But I do like that, yes.
Yeah.
He does, at the end, he puts a vegetable on corpses. He says, salt white, crumbling mush of corpse, smell, taste like raw white turnips. So I think that's what a corpse tastes like, maybe. I wonder if Joyce had a bite.
I wonder if he had a bite. I would not be surprised. I was just going to say, it's just so interesting to me always how, and in describing cheeses or different foods when you eat them, people choose the most curious ways to describe cheese. And I haven't heard white turnips yet, but there is something, yeah, about that earthiness, that pungency. And another customer of mine once described a certain kind of cheese as sex in his mouth, which I thought was, I was like, oh my God. I was like, I can't believe he said that. And then I was like, but I guess, you know, in the end, there's something to it.
Cheese and dark chocolate, I think.
Yeah.
Extremely dark chocolate. Are the two closest things, probably.
So Joyce is kind of, is not bashful about bringing all that to light.
No, he's not.
But what was the next thing? You had another passage.
This is a kind of vegetarian segue.
Okay.
So Bloom has been wandering the streets. He's a bit hungry. This is the very worst hour of the day. I hate this hour. I feel as if I've been eaten and spewed. It's all about food. You know, we are what we... He sees somebody coming out of a restaurant. There he is, the eminent poet, Mr. George Russell. That might be Lizzie Twigg with them, coming from the vegetarian. Only wedge of bobbles and fruit. Don't eat a beefsteak. If you do, the eyes of that cow will pursue you through all eternity. They say it's healthier. Tried it. Keep you on the run all day. Bad as a bloater. Those literary, ethereal people they all are. Dreamy, cloudy, symbolistic. I wouldn't be surprised if it was that kind of food, you see, produces the poetical. For example, one of those policemen sweating Irish stew into their shirts, you couldn't squeeze a line of poetry out of him. Don't know what poetry is, even. After that, he goes into the...
Is Joyce saying that maybe vegetarians are lacking that that connection to the putrid, the fetid?
He's putting them with the ethereal, yes. And it's a very thin line, you know, between the real and the ethereal, but it's a theme that runs through the whole book. There's a poster over the bed of the bath of the nymph, which is an ethereal picture of a woman, beautiful.
Is that the woman in the clamshell?
No, I don't. That's Venus and...
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Yeah. No, he made it up. He calls it the bath of the nymph, and it's an ethereal picture over the bed. And it has to be destroyed, really, because it's kind of... It's a false economy. It's not a real woman, and it's over their marriage bed, and it's the ethereal, not the real. And he comes down on the side of the real, mostly. But here he's saying that, you know... That all those poets are so that they must be eating vegetarian food and that's causing them to write poetry. I don't know. It's a bit silly.
Well, I'm glad that I might be less poetic for eating cheese and meat and all the rest of it, yeah. But I think I'd rather fall on that side.
Yes.
So as we go on, what does he have for lunch? He decides a different course.
Yes, I'm hungry. He entered Davy Byrne's bar. Hello, Bloom, Nosey Flynn said from his nook. Hello, Flynn. How's things? Tip top, let me see. I'll take a glass of burgundy and let me see a sandwich. Ham and his descendants, mustard and bread there. Potted meats, what's a home without Dignam's potted meat? What a stupid ad. Cheese digests all but itself. Mighty cheese. Have you a cheese sandwich? Yes, sir. I'd like a few olives too if they had them. Italian I prefer. Millie served me that cutlet with a sprig of parsley. Take one Spanish onion. God made the food, the devil the cooks. Wife well? Quite well, thanks. A cheese sandwich, then. Gorgonzola, have you? Yes, sir. Is she doing any singing these times? Better tell him, does no harm for yet. She's engaged for a big tour at the end of the month. You may have heard, perhaps. Oh, no, that's the style. Who's getting it up? How much is that? 7 pence, sir. Thank you. Mustard, sir? Thank you. He studded under each lifted strip yellow blobs. Getting it up. Well, it's a company idea, you see. Part shares, part profits. Ah, now I remember. Who was telling me? Isn't Blaze's Boiling mixed up in it? A warm shock of air, heat of mustard haunched on Mr. Bloom's heart. He raised his eyes and met the stare of a bilbous clock. Time going on, not yet. His midriff yearned, then upward, sank within him, yearned more, longly, longingly. Wine. He smell-sipped the cordial juice and, bidding his throat strongly to speed it, set his wine glass delicately down. Yes, he's the organiser in point of fact. Mr. Bloom ate his strips of sandwich, fresh clean bread with relish of disgust, pungent mustard, the feety savour of green cheese. Sips of his wine soothed his palate. Not logwood, that tastes fuller for the weather, with the chill off. I taste it better because I'm not thirsty. Bath, of course, does that. Just a bite or two. Then around six, I can... Six. Six. Time will be gone then. She. Boiling. So that's his lunch.
So again with the Gorgonzola sandwich with mustard.
Yeah, and he wine-soaked and softened, rolled pith of bread, mustard, a moment, mawkish cheese. He savours it in his mouth. He mixes the wine and the cheese and the bread and just lets that roll for a second.
And we all do. Yeah. Again, we all do that. But hearing it described in such a way, you know, it is quite, almost sounds a little disgusting, you know?
Almost. But, you know, it's like, it's what we do. It's what we do. Disgusting, probably. And probably. I think Joy said, let's embrace that.
That's true. We're all a bunch of animals running around. So.
Yeah. And then he remembers his first kiss. Now, poor Bloom, his first kiss was a bit too much for him. Molly was his first kiss.
Molly's his wife.
Molly's his wife. And his first kiss was from his wife, and she slipped him a mawkish pulp of seed cake into his mouth in the middle of the kiss, and it quite blew his mind. I think he never recovered.
Now, seed cake. What is seed cake?
Seed cake would just be a granola bar with loads of seeds in it, but it would be made locally and, you know, lots of seeds, you know, with, I suppose, sunflower seeds and all that sort of stuff, good stuff.
So that's really interesting. So, in this whole bout, this whole day, this whole relationship that he is in hinges on fertility or the lack thereof, and they're struggling whether or not they're going to have another child. And so for them to have their first kiss, you know, be seed cake is kind of pretty poignant as well.
Yeah. And let me go on here. He remembers this first kiss. Will I give you a quick blast of him remembering?
Sure.
Okay. And it comes from the wine again. He takes a sip of his wine and he says, "Seems to a secret touch telling me memory. Hidden under wild ferns and hoth, my hand under her nape. You'll toss me all, oh wonder. Cool, soft with ointments, her hand touched me, caressed. Her eyes upon me did not turn away. Ravished over her lay, full lips full open, kissed her mouth. Yum. Softly she gave me in my mouth the seed cake warm and chewed, mawkish pulp her mouth had mumbled sweet and sour with spittle joy, I ate a joy. Young life her lips that gave me pouting, soft, warm, sticky, grum jelly lips, flowers her eyes were take me willing eyes, pebbles fell, she lay still. A goat? No one. High on Ben Hoth rhododendrons, a nanny goat walking sure-footed, dropping currants, screened under ferns, she laughed warm-folded. Wildly I lay in her, kissed her eyes, her lips, her stretched neck beating, woman's breast full in her blows of nun's veiling, fat nipples upright, hot I tongued her. She kissed me, I was kissed. All yielding, she tossed my hair, kissed, she kissed me. Me, and me now. Talk. Talk. Museum. Naked goddesses. Aids to digestion. What would she say first? Mortal? Put you in your proper place. Quaffing nectar at mess with God's golden dishes. All ambrosial. Nectar. Imagine it. Drinking electricity. God's food. And we stuffing food in one hole and out behind. Food, chyle, blood, dung, earth food, like stoking an engine. Goddesses have no anus. I never looked. I look today. Museum keeper won't see. Bend down, let something drop, see if she... 4 o'clock! Oh, clock. At four, she... So it's haunting him the whole day is this 4 o'clock and Boylan, and he just can't get away from it. And
4 o'clock is supposedly when Boylan and his wife are going to have a tryst.
They're going to have a tryst over the piano.
Uh-huh.
Cue music.
Cue music, exactly. it is incredible how much he just is able to weave all of this talk of food and the cycle of food as it relates to different parts of his life and different parts of his day. He's fully steeped in it.
He's fully steeped. Let me just give you two quick cheeses. Okay. He's telling somebody to shut up. Oh, cheese it. Shut your blurry Dutch oven with a firm hand. And then he's referring to another inferior soprano rather than his wife. Reedy freckle soprano. Cheese pairing nose. The cheesiness of it all.
The cheesiness of it all. So cheese can be an insult. Cheese can be, a statement, a firm statement. Cheese can be a comparison to death. Cheese can be,
cheesy. I mean, that's a bad one for cheese. You know, they say things are cheesy.
Things are cheesy, kind of
cheap and kind of imitation and like not so well
and ridiculous in a way.
Who made that one up?
I don't know.
Done with that.
Someone who doesn't love cheese.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. But lucky for us, James Joyce did, and he used it with pluck and with a particular spirit all throughout the book, which I'm now quite excited to go back and read after having heard this adaptation. And so tell our listeners, you said that there's a possibility, if anyone wanted to come out and see the next reading of this, is there a way that they could find out about it?
I would say for the next reading, we're looking for producers. We're looking for money. So if anybody's got money and they want to come, but we hope to have this up before the summer in a theater near you. we've got everything in place and we just need some money.
Well, we'll find some money. So check saxelbycheese.com and I will put it on the calendar when Patrick is going to be doing his next reading of Gibraltar. It's a real treat to have you. And thank you for reading with us today. I feel like we were an old-fashioned, radio serial or something. Yes. Having a story told.
Well, we could do three of these shows, I'm sure, and we still wouldn't have gotten to the bottom of this food business.
Well, that's what he says. Cheese never ends, right? And just keeps on
reproducing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming out today. And we will see everybody next week, next Sunday, on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.